Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. I'm a resident. This is episode 242 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And in this podcast, I'm going to be starting a three-part series. Initially, I thought to, and it's going to be on dermatology. Initially, my idea was to make it one part, but I'm beginning to realize that dermatology is quite the huge topic. And the thing is, this is classically a very difficult topic for people to study for the USMLE exams. So I figured I'll just cover it, but be very comprehensive and make it in three parts so that each podcast is short. And my apologies, I chose to not make a PowerPoint for this. I'll encourage you, as you're going through each diagnosis, pause the podcast and look up a picture. Because to be quite honest with you, I really cannot... many of these things really gross me out. So my body does not really enjoy going through the process of kind of looking up pictures of most of this stuff. So my sincere apologies on that. Okay. And just real quick, I have my next Step 2 CK class on the 27th of this month. Again, just email me if you want some more information. But basically, it's the same format as I've done for other classes. But, you know, I'm trying to make modifications. So actually, I'll be making a fairly... it has gotten very good reviews, but I plan to make some mild modifications for the next iteration coming up in 2 weeks. So if you want to register, spots are limited. Just send me an email and I will point you in the right direction. Okay, now what if they give you a question about a patient and they tell you that this patient has like dry skin and they tell you that this patient has like intense pruritus and then they tell you on physical exam, you notice a lot of erythematous like papules and vesicles, and they tell you that there's a lot of crusting and oozing. And let's say it's a person that has a family history of asthma. What are you thinking about for that question? I would really hope you're telling me that that person has atopic dermatitis or eczema, right? And it is actually very high yield to know some associations with eczema here with regards to kids versus adults. It's high yield to know that in adults, eczema tends to show up on flexural surfaces, but when people are super young kids, the eczema tends to show up on extensor surfaces first before it then manifests to the flexural surfaces. So basically, like if you look at your antecubital fossa, that's your flexural surface for your upper extremity, right? That's where eczema tends to show up in older adults, right? And then the thing is, on an NBMA exam, they may ask you, what is the classic finding in a person that has had chronic atopic dermatitis? Well, you want to think about the term known as a lichenification. Right? Lichenification. Basically, these people have itched for like a ton, right? So their skin is now like looks scaly, looks very fissured. That's like characteristic of like chronic eczema. And if they give you a question, they may say, which of the following is the most likely infectious complication of a person having atopic dermatitis? You want to think about a Staph aureus superinfection, right? And remember that eczema is a kind of type 1 hypersensitivity reaction. I'll talk about the treatment of eczema in a bit. Now, what if they give you a question about a patient and they tell you that, you know, this patient acquired new jewelry and this patient has like a lot of itching around their wrists? What are you thinking about there? Well, I would hope you're really thinking about contact dermatitis, right? Contact dermatitis, there's like the type that's called like allergic contact dermatitis. Probably, you know, this person has like some kind of nickel in the jewelry that he recently acquired, and that's causing a lot of problems for them. Now, one thing I would also say, because you know your friends at the NBMA, again, they are trying to find new ways of testing old information, right? So again, they know that many people have memorized nickel, right? So you want to begin to think about some other things that potentially cause contact dermatitis. And by the way, contact dermatitis is a type 4 hypersensitivity reaction. You want to think along the lines of like, you know, like all these like medication patches, those things classically can cause contact dermatitis, right? Poison oak, poison ivy, right? Those things can absolutely cause contact dermatitis, right? Again, remember the hallmark of poison ivy is usually they will show you like a picture, right? And you'll see like, you know, like all these like vesicular lesions. They'll be like vesicles. They'll be grouped, and usually they'll be in a linear distribution. That's classic for poison ivy on NBMA exams, right? And again, remember atopic dermatitis, flexural surfaces. The reason that I'm mentioning that is when a person has like psoriasis will be on the extensor surfaces. The thing is, many times on NBMA questions, they may not even give you the picture of the dermatologic condition. They'll just describe it to you, right? They'll give you some buzzwords. So it's those buzzwords that I'm going to try to focus on in this podcast. Now, what if they give you a question about like a 79-year-old female, you know, they tell you that she presents to a dermatologist because, you know, she has had like really dry skin, especially like on her left shin, right? Like her left, you know, like her left lower extremity, like her anterior shin. And they tell you that, oh, on physical exam, the skin is red, it's dry, it has all these net-like fissures, right? And again, let's say this person presents in December. You know, this stuff I'm talking about now, you know, it's really bad in cold weather, really bad in dry, like dry weather. If you see this, you want to think about a kind of eczema known as xerotic eczema. X-E-R-O-T-I-C. Xerotic eczema, right? That's a classic thing that may present on MBM exams. And again, remember, it tends to present in old people, not young people on exams. Old people, right? Old people, right? So again, you'll have red skin, you'll be dry, you'll be cracked, and again, it'll look net-like. And it's usually on the lower extremities. It's almost like they have like, it's almost like, I've almost looked at it as like a tree bark appearance of their lower extremities, especially around the shins. If you see that, you absolutely, absolutely want to think about xerotic dermatitis. Sometimes they call it asteatotic. So like A-S-T-E-A-T-O-T-I-C dermatitis, right? And the thing is, in general, like if a person has like atopic dermatitis or even any kind of dermatitis, right, you generally want to just, you know, select the answer that says to use emollients, right? But don't forget that typically you want to use topical glucocorticoids, right? Topical glucocorticoids work really well for the treatment of most kinds of eczema or most kinds of dermatitis. Although you actually want to be careful, especially if you're dealing with like dermatitis of the face, right? If a person has eczema on their face, you don't want to use like these high potency glucocorticoids, because remember, those steroids can cause atrophy of the skin. You don't want that, right? And those steroids can also cause acne. Remember, one of the common causes of acne on MBM exams is actually the use of topical corticosteroids, right? Now, what if they give you a question about a patient and they tell you that, you know, this is a 36-year-old Mexican male, and they tell you that, you know, on his elbows, right, you know, like the extensor surface of his elbows, you are finding like thick erythematous plaques, and they tell you that he has silvery scale, right? If you see that, what are you thinking about? I would really hope you're thinking about like plaque psoriasis, right? Plaque psoriasis. Remember, right, again, typically when people have psoriasis, right, they'll have like, you know, the area will be red, right? And again, it'll be on an extensor surface. And the classic areas it tends to show up on MBM exams is it can show up around the elbows, it can show up on the knees, right? It can show up on, so basically extensor surfaces, it can show up on the scalp, it can show up on the ears, it can show up in the genitalia, right? And the thing is, one classic physical exam finding on MBM is in people that have psoriasis is that they will have like very thick nails, like their nails will be thick, it'll be yellow, they'll have a lot of like nail peeling. If you see that, you want to think about psoriasis, especially in a Hispanic person on MBM exams. And there are some key things that can actually make psoriasis worse, right? So if a person is taking like a beta blocker or an NSAID or like an allopurinol, like an ACE inhibitor, right? Or even like, again, like these oral steroids, or even tetracyclines, these things can actually all trigger psoriasis. They can actually worsen a person's psoriasis or make the person have like more flares, right? So those are things to keep in mind on exams. And then there is one kind of psoriasis that occasionally, you know, you see it kind of shows up on exams and people are like, what in the world are they talking about, right? So what if they give you a question about a patient and they tell you that, oh, this patient has like a lot of papules and plaques on their trunk, right? And they tell you that it looks like tiny, like drops, like tiny drops, right? And they tell you that, oh, this person was recently developed like a group A strep skin infection. If you see, so like strep pyogenes are skin infection. If you see that, you want to think about something known as guttate psoriasis. So G-U-T-T-A-T-E, guttate psoriasis, right? And again, in general, for psoriasis, if you're trying to think of treatment on an MBM exam, you want to go ahead and give those people like a topical or vitamin D analog, right? So like the classic one you may see on your exam is something known as calcipotriene. So C-A-L-C-I-P-O-T-R-I-E-N-E. Right, so topical calcipotriene, or you can use like a topical retinoid, or you can use like topical anthralin, right, or like a tar preparation, right? Rarely is it the right answer to use like a topical steroid on MBM exams for psoriasis. And let me tell you one thing right off the bat: please never do this. Never give oral steroids or IV steroids for psoriasis. If you do that, I promise you, you'll get that question wrong on exams, right? You'll get that question wrong on exams. So you really want to be careful with that. You really want to be careful with that, because the thing is, like systemic steroids can actually worsen a person's psoriasis. In fact, sometimes some people can get a very dangerous complication. They call it erythroderma, where like their skin just turns really red, especially when they have a history of psoriasis and they are taking like oral steroids, right? That erythroderma, this is actually one of the few reasons why you would consult dermatology at night, right? Because these people, right, like when they get that erythroderma, they begin to have all these electrolyte abnormalities from like just losing a ton of fluid, and they have like very, very high risk of like a skin super infection, right? So those are, again, things you want to watch out for on an NBM exam. So again, systemic steroids, those are a terrible idea in a person that has psoriasis, right? Again, those are terrible ideas. Never ever give steroids, systemic steroids, to a person that has psoriasis on NBMEs. Okay, now what if they give you a question about a patient and they tell you that this patient, you know, they've noticed over the last 3 days they've been having a lot of pruritus on their wrists, and they've also noticed it on the ankles. And then they tell you that, oh, on physical exam, you notice like some purple papules. And they tell you that, oh, these lesions are shaped like polygons, right? And again, notice the distribution, wrist, ankles, right? Wrist, ankles, and they are purple, they are pruritic, they are shaped like polygons. If you see that, you want to think about a diagnosis of lichen planus, right? You want to think about lichen planus, right? And the way you treat lichen planus is with a topical corticosteroid. Now, what if they give you a question about a patient that, again, over the last 2 weeks has had a lot of pruritus, right? And then they tell you that, oh, this person had like, they noticed like a circular, or sometimes it can be like a rectangular like lesion on their trunk, right? Usually this is what's called the herald patch. And then they tell you that, you know, days later they started noticing all these red pruritic like patches like on their trunk, on their backs, under their axilla and all that stuff, right? And this thing usually lasts for weeks. If you see this, you want to think about pityriasis rosea, right? You want to think about pityriasis rosea, right? And the way you treat pityriasis rosea, right, there's really no great treatment. But if they're trying to get you to select something on an NBM exam, you can give those people topical steroids, right? Or you can also give them like antihistamines to help with the pruritus, right? Now, what if they give you a question about a patient and they tell you that this patient has like these like oily, scaly lesions on their eyebrows? I mean, this thing can also show up like on the scalp. It can also show up like it can show up on the nasolabial folds. It can show up on the chin. It can show up in the perineum in some rare cases. If you see something like this, what are you thinking about? Well, I would really hope you're thinking about seborrheic dermatitis, right? You want to think about seborrheic dermatitis. And the way you treat seborrheic dermatitis on NBM exams is actually with like a shampoo of usually like selenium sulfide, although you could also potentially use like ketoconazole. But first line on your test should be like a selenium sulfide shampoo, right? And there are some weird, bizarre associations you want to keep at the back of your mind with seborrheic dermatitis. And the first thing is, if they tell you that, oh, a young person that's sexually active develops like just explosive, like just tons and tons and tons of lesions that are seborrheic dermatitis, you want to go ahead and screen that person for HIV, right? That's a classic presentation of HIV on exams, right? And also, don't forget, seborrheic dermatitis classically on NBMEs may be seen in a person that has Parkinson's disease, okay? So again, that's something you want to keep at the back of your mind for exams. Now, one thing, I guess one concept I should talk about is, what if they give you a question about the 35-year-old female, right? And they tell you that, you know, she has had like redness of like her cheeks, of her nose, right? And, you know, they tell you that she has like, whenever she eats spicy foods, she has like a lot of like facial flushing. Whenever she takes alcohol, she has like facial flushing. If you see that, you absolutely want to think about rosacea, right? You want to think about rosacea on your test. You want to think about rosacea on your test. And remember, rosacea on NBM is almost certainly, that person will be more than 30 years old. You'll show up in a woman, and that woman will be more than 30 years old on your NBME exam, right? If you see that, you absolutely want to think about rosacea. And the thing is, sometimes on your test, right, they will like to try to like mess with your head, you know, like the way the NBME does. They'll try to mess with your head by trying to get you to think that, oh, this person has lupus. They may try to present like that, the presentation of rosacea. They may try to make it look like the Miller rash of lupus. Here's one key thing I think that will help you.
Correct.
Actually, two key things. One, the rash of lupus spares the nasolabial folds. The malar rash of rosacea does not spare the nasolabial folds. That's one. Two, people that have lupus, they would not have these flushing episodes. They would not have any papules. They would not have any pustules on their face. But people that have rosacea will. Okay, so again, those are all high yield things you want to keep at the back of your mind for exams, right? And one thing I guess I want to say is, if they give you a question about like a woman, right, and they tell you that, you know, this woman suddenly develops like severe acne. I'll talk about acne in a bit, but, you know, woman just develops like this sudden onset severe acne. And they tell you that, oh, man, you've tried all these acne medications, nothing is working. And they tell you that this woman has hirsutism, or she has like menstrual problems, or she has like signs of virilization, right? If you see that, you want to think about a person that potentially has like some kind of tumor, either in the adrenal glands that's making DHEAS, or in the her gonad, right? Like a Sertoli Leydig cell tumor that's making testosterone, right? So those are all high yield things you want to keep in mind for exams. Now, what if they give you a question about a patient? They tell you that, oh, this patient has a history of diabetes, and they tell you that they've had these chronic lesions like under their axilla, under their breasts, right? And they tell you that, in fact, they may even have this like in their, like in the gluteal cleft. And they tell you that, oh, this person has been having, a lot of like, they tell you on physical exam, you'll see like a lot of like nodules, a lot of cysts, like a lot of comedones. And they tell you that you see a lot of scarring. Again, notice the distribution here. Under the axilla, right? Under the breasts, in the inguinal folds, right? Around the gluteal region. If you see this, this is hidradenitis suppurativa, right? This is hidradenitis suppurativa. Remember, this affects apocrine, sweat glands, right? Remember, acne itself affects sebaceous glands, sebaceous follicles. But hidradenitis suppurativa affects apocrine or sweat glands, right? It's pretty bad. And really, the way you treat hidradenitis suppurativa on your test, if they're trying to get you to pick a drug, you can either pick the combination of clindamycin and rifampin, or you can pick a TNF inhibitor, actually, like infliximab. But for the most part, the definitive treatment for hidradenitis suppurativa is to go ahead and excise those lesions, right? So those people need some kind of a surgical excision, right? And then we all know how acne presents, right? So acne, right, it will present like, again, it will be in a woman on a test, right? And they will see, buzzwords you'll see in the question will be like, oh, there's open and closed comedones, there's papules, there's pustules, there's nodular lesions. And for the most part on NBMEs, the distribution will be the face, the neck, or like the upper trunk. If you see that, right, that's acne vulgaris, right? And again, remember, it's sebaceous follicles, sebaceous sweat glands that are affected. And acne on NBME exams, right, the way you typically want to treat it is, first line, you want to either start with a topical agent, right, like a topical retinoid or topical salicylic acid or topical benzoyl peroxide, right? If that's not cutting it, you then switch second line, or not switch, actually, you add on a topical antibiotic like topical erythromycin, topical clindamycin. If that's not working, you add on a third line thing, right? You want to add on like an oral antibiotic. You can use like tetracycline. Remember tetracycline, if they give you a question about the person that's, you know, taking like tetracycline for acne, and then this person has like many week history of like headaches, visual difficulty that's worse in the mornings, right? You want to think about idiopathic intracranial hypertension under those circumstances, right? And then if all those things are not working, obviously, right, you want to go ahead and give those people isotretinoin, right? Remember, isotretinoin, you need to make sure that those people's livers work well, and they need to be on two forms of birth control. And if the woman is pregnant, she should not be on isotretinoin, right? If she's pregnant, she should also not be on an oral tetracycline, right? That'd be a bad idea. Remember, those things are all teratogens, right? So you want to keep that at the back of your mind for exams. And actually, if you get a question about a woman that has like PCOS, for example, and she has acne, your drug of choice, right, because she has signs of hyperandrogenism, your drug of choice there is actually an OCP. An OCP is actually very effective at relieving acne in that specific kind of a patient population. And then what if they give you a question about an athlete, right, and they tell you that this athlete, you know, like on their scalp, on their buttocks, on their thighs, they have all these like pustules and papules, right? And they tell you that they are centered around like hair follicles, right? Basically anywhere that has hair. Notice this will be in an alpha ethanol test. If you see that, you want to think about bacterial folliculitis, right? And remember, the most common cause of bacterial folliculitis is actually staph aureus, right? And typically these things you can try treating with like a topical, like antibiotic, like topical mupirocin, for example, right? And then don't forget another kind of folliculitis, right? If you see a person that uses like a community pool or a hot tub that's, you know, been inadequately chlorinated, you want to think about hot tub folliculitis, right? And remember, that's classically caused by a Pseudomonas species. Okay. And then don't forget, right, the buzzword hot tub lung. I think I may have talked about it in a different podcast. Remember, that's actually caused by Mycobacterium avium complex, right? So Mycobacterium avium intracellulare on MBM exams. Okay. So, this is 20 minutes already. Okay, I'm going to try and stop this soon, but let me kind of shuffle in these are dermatophyte skin infections, right? So they are basically, these things are all tinians. And the thing is, the most common cause to the least common cause are three organisms. The most common cause of any kind of tinea is trichophyton, especially trichophyton tonsurans on MBM exams. That's number one. Number two will be microsporum species, so microsporum. And then number three will be the epidermophyton species, right? And remember, all these things are referred to as dermatophyte infections for the most part, right? And the big thing you want to think about, you know, like there's tinea pedis, right? This is what's called a like athlete's foot, right? So basically you see like all the scaling and fissuring between the toes. Although one unusual way they may present it on an exam may be like, it's almost like in a distribution of a shoe, right? You see like all the scaling all around from like the person's toes all the way back to around the area of the Achilles. If you see that, that's tinea pedis, right? Tinea corpus is probably the most common one on exams, right? Those people, they'll have a circular lesion, right? And they'll tell you that it will be like a circle of red, right? So it'll be like around the circle, it's red, right? So they will have like an erythematous circle, right? And that thing will have like vesicles, right? Some vesicles, some scales around it, but the center of it will be clear, right? The buzzword there is central clearing. That's tinea corporis, right? That's ringworm, right? And then, right, like, you know, jock itch, right? Usually it will be like a very itchy person. They'll just have a lot of red around like their inguinal folds, right? And then nail fungus, right? Those people have like thick nails. It'll be yellow. It could be like really white, right? And then they'll tell you that the distal edge, right? Like, so basically like the part that's like farthest away from your skin, right? They'll tell you that it's elevated and it's almost like separated from the nail plate. If you see that, you want to think about a kind of, sometimes they call it tinea unguium, but the classic term on MBM exams is onychomycosis, right? Onychomycosis. And one thing that I guess is closely related that I should maybe try to slot in here is like candida, right? Like people can have like cutaneous candidiasis, right? Usually these people have like red itchy skin, right? And then you will find red satellite lesions, right? That's characteristic of candidiasis, right? That's characteristic of candidiasis, right? And again, typically these dermatophyte infections, the way you make the diagnosis, right, is you go ahead and like, you know, you may scrape some part of the lesion and do like some kind of a KOH prep, whatever, right? And typically you'll find branching hyphae, right? You find branching hyphae. If it's candida, that's the bug. They'll tell you that on exams, you see on KOH prep, you see spores and pseudo hyphae. Okay, you see spores and pseudo hyphae. And I guess one other KOH prep thing, right? If they tell you that a person has like hypopigmented like macules, again, around like their upper trunk or their back, you want to think about tinea vesicula, right? Tinea vesicula. Remember, tinea vesicula, sometimes on exams to mess with your head, they'll call it pityriasis vesicula, right? Remember, this is caused by Malassezia furfur on exams, right? And classically on KOH prep, you'll find the spaghetti and meatballs pattern, right? You'll find the spaghetti and meatballs pattern. And again, don't forget candida. Red skin with satellite lesions, satellite papules and pustules. That's classic for candida. In terms of treatment, right? So typically all tinea's respond, at least all the tinea corporis, tinea cruris, like the jock itch or the tinea pedis, which is also the athlete's foot. Those things respond very well to like topical antifungals, right? Topical antifungals like topical clotrimazole, basically any topical antifungal agent will work. However, if a person has tinea capitis, right? Or if a person has, so like head fungus, or a person has like onychomycosis, right? Those people need an oral medication on MBM exams. You can use oral terbinafine, right? Or you can use like oral itraconazole. Or you can also use oral Grisio Fovin, right? Remember, Grisio Fovin, though, you need to be careful. It actually revs up cytochrome P450. And remember, one of these weird basic science things they love on exams is that Grisio Fovin is very good at penetrating keratin-containing tissue, right? Keratin-containing tissue. For candida, right, the way you treat cutaneous candida, right, you can use, again, like topical nystatin or any topical azole, right, like myconazole, clotrimazole, or whatever, right? And then if a person has a tinea vesicula, the way you treat it is with selenium sulfide, right? You can use selenium sulfide, or again, you can also use topical ketoconazole on an NBM exam. Okay, and the last thing I will mention today, right, again, I want to keep this under 30 minutes. If you find a person that, you know, has like umbilicated like papules on the skin, right? You want to think about molluscum contagiosum, right? Remember, that's caused by the pox virus. And really, the way you treat these on exams, you know, you can do like cryotherapy, or you can do like curettage, right? And again, usually it shows up in a sexually active person, although it can show up in a kid on a test, right? If you see a person that has like a ton of molluscum contagiosum, again, you want to maybe begin to think about HIV in that patient population. So I think I'm going to go ahead and pause here today. As I do at the end of every podcast, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for many exams, right? So step one, step two CK, step two CS, step three, preclinical med school exams, third year shelf exams. Remember, I do longitudinal tutoring where, you know, if you're a med student in your first year of med school or second year, or you're studying your third year shelf rotations, your third year rotations, right? I'll tutor you for all your block exams or your shelf exams. And then at the same time, I'll tutor you for the relevant USMLE content. And again, many people have done this with, they've been extremely successful with it. And then I do offer booster courses. It's 20 hours for step one, step two CK, or step three. It's all one-on-one. And again, it'll be like 21-hour sessions or 10 two-hour sessions, and we'll comprehensively review the high yields for the different disciplines represented on each of those tests. And then in recent times, I've started offering a group class. Right now, it's a step 2 CK group class. I, you know, try to hold it roughly every 2 weeks, although it really depends on what my schedule looks like. But the next one will be taking place on the 27th of this month. I've finally been able to confirm my schedule today. So it's going to be taking place on the 27th of this month. The details are the same as what I've released in the prior podcast where I've talked about the reviews. But, you know, basically from 6 to 10 a.m. Pacific time in the morning, and then noon to 4 p.m. Pacific time in the afternoon, and then 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific time in the evening, all in one day, we'll hold those sessions. And in the future, I may try to split it up between days, so it's not like 10 hours all in one day. But again, in the meantime, with the way my schedule is now, I think I would have to stick with just 10 hours, one day. I mean, you have 2 hour breaks in between so you can rest. And in this course, we basically review like 600 to 700 high yield concepts across like peds, surgery, internal medicine, neurology, OB-GYN, psych, and neuro, right? So we review all those things in a 10-hour period. And again, it's very high yield. We'll cover a lot of content that you'll see represented on exams. And I'll present them in like classic MBME vignettes, right? Like the classic ways they tend to present those things on exams. And as an update, a step one course of that kind is going to be coming up very soon. That's something that's currently in the works. So if that's something you're interested in, feel free to reach out. Feel free to reach out to me. Now, and then if you're a med student applying to residency, especially with this tricky application cycle like ERAS, or a college student applying to med school, so like an AMCAS application, I'd offer like consulting, right, for like one-on-one for like rec letters, personal statements, applications, mock interviews. I edit, I write, I do all these things with all these different things. Again, if you have a tricky application, low scores, no research, graduated from med school 10 years ago or something like that, reach out to me and I can give you some more information on what I provide. And then the life lesson for today is the importance of not enough, right? Basically, what do I mean by that? I don't mean not being content with what you have. But what I mean is always have this standard for excellence, right? Don't always think that you're good enough, right? The thing is, that should be your approach throughout life. If you believe that, oh, I am good enough, then you are basically limiting yourself in life, right? Like, you always want to keep pushing the boundary, pushing the boundary, pushing the boundary. You want to keep getting better and better and better and better. You want your light to keep shining brighter and brighter, right? Don't think, oh, you know, this is just good enough. This is good enough. This is good enough. This is just okay. I remember those ATT ads that say just okay. No, that's not the kind of standard you want for your life. You want to keep getting better and better and better, right? I mean, I love, as many of you know, I'm a Christian. I love the book of Daniel in the Bible, right? Where there's a part that says that, oh, Daniel was so good that you could not find a single error in his work, right? I'm not saying that people cannot make mistakes. They can, right? But you should have that standard of excellence, right? You should have that standard of excellence. Always try to keep getting better. Even if you're like doing really well, you're at the very top, you can always get better than that, right? You can always break new ground. You can always break new barriers. You can always blaze new trails. I mean, to be honest with you, even if I'm a Laker fan, one of the best names I love in basketball are the Portland Trail Blazers. You want to be a person that blazes trails in life, right? Those kinds of people, they are always improving. They are always getting better. And the thing is, those people will not be left behind, because the person that is stuck in the past will be left behind and the world will move on from them, right? So again, just key things you want to keep at the back of your mind. I think those will help you in life. So thank you for listening. Watch out for part 2 and part 3 of the USMLE Dermatology series. Thank you and God bless you.